The agri-hood is one approach to what I call kind of the local food movement. It's people trying to ensure the integrity of their food by getting your food from people they know. And you, as that neighborhood, have control over how it's produced.
Farm-to-table living, a neighborhood that would be based on community and doing life with people and wellness. And so I'm reading this description of this agri-community, and I look at my husband, and I'm like, we will live here.
We set out on a journey over 7,000 miles ago because we wanted to learn as much as we could about the agri-hood lifestyle. And what we quickly realized is why more and more people are choosing healthier and sustainable communities over traditional or conventional subdivisions.
The biggest difference would just be the sense of like-minded people. We all want our kids to be outside, fishing, climbing trees, you know, visiting with the animals, being in touch with reality, being in touch with nature, eating healthy food. I mean, there's really no comparison. There's nothing quite like what we're experiencing here.
You're dialed into the perfect podcast. This is Agri-Hood Radio. Everything you need to know about the farm-to-table lifestyle.
Hey, Carrie, how are you?
I'm good today.
Great. We said today. Aren't you good every day? What you're doing right now, you need to go to bed at night saying, you know what? I feel pretty darn good knowing that I'm making a difference in the world. So my four-year-old boy, anytime anybody asks him, hey, Cash, how you doing? He says, perfect.
Oh, well, that's a really good attitude. I will try to adopt that. There's a lot of stress and strain that comes with this job. That's for sure.
I can only imagine. I emphasize the word only imagine. We have a lot to cover in a short amount of time because your schedule is overbooked. I got it. I got that. So let's dive right into this with some specific bullet points. Whitewash, your awesome book was published back in October of 2017. Is that correct?
That is right. Yeah.
And you have Aaron Brockovich, who supports your book and says very nice things about it. You were an investigative journalist for many, many years. So I have to ask you, at what turning point does whitewash become an idea?
And what do you mean by that?
Well, when did the concept of you writing a book called Whitewash start to enter
I see. I knew the title, I guess I would say, before I wrote one word of the book, because to me, what whitewash means is covering up, right? It's making something that looks clean or looks good, or something that actually is not clean or good, but make it look that way, to cover up something that is dirty or secret or deceptive or dangerous. And I covered Monsanto for 20-some years. You know, I started in 1998 as a reporter for Reuters, writing about food and agriculture and Monsanto, and learning all about their products, their genetically engineered crops, and this chemical, glyphosate and Roundup. And, you know, so over these years, I became very familiar with the science surrounding this chemical and this pesticide and what it was doing to the environment, what it was doing to human health in terms of different studies that were coming out. And, you know, it really became clear that Monsanto had been engaged in a really deceptive strategy for decades to whitewash the truth about this product. And that's, you know, so again, I knew the name of the book before I actually knew what it was going to say specifically, but it was 20 years of research. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's a pretty lengthy process of researching, and you gain access behind the doors of one of the largest companies in the world, Monsanto. You flat out say you actually got to like the people. Hugh Grant, the CEO, was a nice guy. You actually talk about this in the lot of your interviews. You say that, and then things started to change.
Yeah, I mean, as part of my job at Reuters, you know, it was to cover Monsanto. I was in fierce competition with the Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg and others to be the first with news, you know, from inside this big company. So I got to know them and spend a lot of time with them, and did, you know, sit down and talk with the president and CEO and, you know, head of marketing and head of international, you know, global sales and things like that on a regular basis. And of course, they're nice people and they're very smart people. Rob Fraley, the head of chief technology officer, I really, really liked him. You know, it's not about liking people or not liking people. It's about what the truth is and where the facts lead you. And as I began to find out that what they were saying didn't necessarily translate to what was actually truthful and what was really happening on the ground, the relationships, I guess, frayed a bit, and they stopped whining and dining and started harassing and, trying to discredit me. And they continue to do that to this day.
The whining and dining went to whining and crying. The thing is, you got behind and you saw some things that weren't on the up and up. If anybody has not seen the Monsanto's papers yet, they need to check that out. That is a huge, huge eye opener. You got to have a sense. Wait a minute, this something isn't seeming on the up and up. There's just something not right here. What was that first indication you got that things were not legit?
Well, it's not very exciting. But back in the late 1990s, early 2000s, Monsanto was trying to roll out a Roundup Ready wheat, another type of genetically engineered crop. They already had soybeans and corn and cotton and things, and they wanted wheat to be genetically engineered to be sprayed directly with their Roundup spray. And the farmers didn't want it. They said, we don't have trouble with weeds like maybe they do in corn and soybean fields. We don't need that. We don't want it. We don't need it. No, thank you. And I watched over the course of, a year and a half and went to all these meetings with farmers in Monsanto and watched how Monsanto basically said to them, we don't care if you want it. You're going to take it. They quite literally tried to shove this down their throats for the express purpose not of helping the farmer, not of helping feed the world, but of boosting sales of Roundup and boosting their own bottom line. And that, to me, became a really clear illustration of exactly what this company was all about. It wasn't about agriculture. It wasn't about helping farmers. It was simply about generating more hundreds of millions of dollars in profit.
And then you have, is it just Roland failing to warn the consumers and regulators the risk about the glyphosate-based herbicide?
Yeah, and then you get into all of the documents that I've gotten thousands of documents, Freedom of Information documents from EPA, USDA, and FDA, and internal communications, the conversations between Monsanto and regulators and others. And what this really shows you, and what I lay out in the book, is not only are they, more concerned about their profits than they are about farmer needs, but they're actively working to hide the risks and actively working to convince and sway regulators to do their bidding, in essence, to try to make critical reviews of their chemicals go away and not matter, and try to just push their own propaganda. And there are many different ways. There are front groups that they use. They ghostwrite scientific literature that they then present to regulators as proof of how safe their products are. We see a lot of money being funneled to specific people and professors and scientists who present themselves as independent of Monsanto, but in fact, are getting money that they're not disclosing. And then they go out and trumpet the safety of Monsanto's products. There's just, as I've said, you can fill a book with all of the different examples of the whitewashing and the deceptive tactics that have gone on. So it's quite eye-opening.
As you're explaining this, I watched the other documentary, The Devil We Know. You've heard of that one, about the DuPont Teflon.
DuPont.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So I'm listening to you talk about Monsanto, and I'm feeling the same way I felt about as I watched the documentary, The Devil We Know, about DuPont and Teflon. It's that, do these large corporations just not give a damn about anybody except themselves and their bottom line, and put the human being at the cost of the expense of them making more money? I mean, is it that simple, Carrie?
It really is. I think it really is that simple. It's outrageous. It's heartbreaking. People die as a result of it. I mean, certainly this is, you see that in the DuPont situation with what they were dumping into the waterways. But it goes back. I've recently been rereading a lot of the tobacco litigation and how the secrets of the tobacco industry came into the public spotlight. And you see this again with powerful industries when there are billions of dollars at stake. It is common strategy to figure out how to hide the science, to silence and harass scientists and journalists and lawyers and others. Anybody who threatens the bottom line, is a target. And we saw that with the tobacco industry, we saw it with DuPont, we see it with Monsanto. It's all about profit over people. And it's just, as I said, it's a heartbreaking story that keeps on being repeated with different industries and different products.
And the more you went on, the more you dug, the deeper you dug, the more you found out, were you thinking to yourself, is there a point, does that drive you? Is that a motivating force that keeps you wanting to find out more? Or are you thinking to yourself, man, I don't know if I'm getting myself in too deep here and I just kind of weigh this all out. Did any of that go through your head?
Well, no. I mean, as a journalist, as someone who's, I've done investigative journalism my whole career, I've spent a lot of time investigating banking shenanigans. But you just want more. You want more and more and more, and you want to pull threads and read documents. And I've spent countless, nights and pre-dawn hours and, reading documents and trying to connect the dots and the conversations and, who is doing what with whom and where's the money trail lead you. And, it's certainly, as I said, the industry has been out for blood. They've been trying to attack me and harass me and discredit me every way they can. And that does get discouraging. You can't stop. You can't walk away.
Right. So never got to, I understand the business aspect, but never got to a personal threat against your life, or your family, harm, anything like that?
Not specifically, we're going to come and kill you. But I've definitely gotten threats. I've gotten late night emails threatening harm that will come, but not specifically death, but just harm. I mean, there have been alarming moments. I've, looked over my shoulder and kept my doors locked. And we've had security at a few events where I speak and, but it isn't just me. I mean, Monsanto and their new owner Bayer, there are scientists around the world that have been warning about this chemical for years. And, I think the public is finally, because of all of this starting to come into the spotlight, the public is becoming aware, and they're not going to be able to keep the secret, forever. The secrets are coming to light.
And then I was watching, I'm sorry, not watching, I was sitting the other day poolside talking to a farmer who was from Iowa, and he had
a farmer by a pool.
Yeah. They're down in they're traveling right now. We're on our cooking show circuit. So we have some time. We're down in Southern Texas and the weather's been nice. We're sitting by the pool and the farmer came by and he had a seed hat on, and I recognized it as a farming hat. I asked him about, he said, yes, I'm a farmer. And I started talking with him and I asked him some pretty good questions, because as you know, or may not know, my wife and I are looking for an agri-hood, a farm to table community to raise our son in. So I'm doing my due diligence, researching, and in that research, I hear a lot, learn a lot, and I have to ask questions. I said, so you're a farmer? Yes. He asked me if I'm a farmer. I said, no, but I study like one. And then I asked him, I said, are you familiar with the Monsanto product? He says, oh, yeah. I've used it for several years, but what I'm finding out now is that the crops are becoming resilient to the glyphosate, the Roundup. And he had flat out said that the sales of Roundup are considerably dropping considerably. Have you heard that?
Well, yes. I mean, this is one of the problems. There are both environmental problems as well as health problems associated with this product. And I write about both in the book. But the environmental problems are that it doesn't work anymore. I mean, it just doesn't work because Mother Nature adapts. And the weeds that this has been poured on for decades now have become resistant. We now have over 100 million acres in the United States alone of weeds that scientists have found to be resistant to Roundup or glyphosate. And so this is a real problem for farmers, of course, even if they're not worried about the health effects of it. If it doesn't work like it used to, that's a problem for them. And so what we've seen over the years is a lot of farmers have tried to use more. So, they'll use twice as much or three times as much. And now we're seeing them combine these products, glyphosate and Roundup products, with other herbicides. So this has created a treadmill in farm country, sort of this awful pesticide treadmill that farmers have a hard time getting off of, where they're just using more and more and the weeds become more resistant. So they use more and more and more again. And, our USDA is trying to come up with a solution to this. The companies are as well. It's becoming a real problem in farm country.
It is. Let's talk about this for a second. Dr. Peter Infante, the epidemiologist, was kicked off the advisory panel. Can you elaborate on that for us a little bit?
Yeah, this was just another example of, you know, the power, I guess, that Monsanto has to hold sway over the EPA. This was the fall of 2016. Right. Do I have my dates right? Yes. Winter of 2016. And the Environmental Protection Agency was holding a scientific advisory panel to bring in scientists, leading scientists from around the country, and help the EPA understand its assessment to glyphosate and if it was looking at glyphosate correctly. And Peter Infante is a leading epidemiologist, one of the leading epidemiologists in the world. And the EPA invited him to be on this scientific advisory panel, and he said yes. And Monsanto said no. We do not want him on the scientific advisory panel. We are afraid of what he might say. And they had their lobbying group, CropLife, write very angry emails to the EPA. And lo and behold, the EPA kicked Peter Infante off the panel, although they did not admit, and they never have, that it had anything to do with Monsanto or Roundup. And in fact, what they did at the meeting, when the meeting was actually held and press members asked about it, they said, well, Peter Infante just wasn't available. Turned out he wasn't available. Well, Peter Infante showed up at the meeting and said, well, I actually was available. It was a little dramatic show. But that's just one example. There are many more of how Monsanto has asked the EPA to do certain things for them and have had those wishes granted to the benefit of product sales.
Same company that created Agent Orange.
Monsanto was one of the major manufacturers and distributors of Agent Orange. Yeah.
Right. And then they are associated with many food labels out there. And they go on record as saying that their glyphosate is safer than table salt. And that got kicked out, banned from, they weren't allowed to say that anymore in New York, but they still say that every other state in the country, they're allowed to say that, that's safer than table salt. My head spins.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is part of their argument that this is the safest herbicide that's been brought to market, which in many respects, it was a lot safer than other herbicides farmers were using. There are some that are quite toxic and quite deadly on an acute basis. There's one called Paraquat that if you're exposed to it, if you get a little few drops on your tongue, you'll be dead within weeks. Roundup wasn't like that. It was safer for farmers, and Monsanto made a lot of that in its marketing campaigns. But of course, they've always maintained that it's not carcinogenic, where there's a great body of scientific evidence that it is carcinogenic. There's also evidence that indicates that it is related to reproductive problems in people, and you know, can result in bad birth outcomes and things like that. So, but there's no denying that one of the main problems with all of this is that Monsanto pushed Roundup use so aggressively that it became the most widely used herbicide in the world, and it's now pervasive. It's in our food, our water. Our government has documented it in air samples and surface water samples. They documented glyphosate residues in rainfall. You find it in just, you know, hundreds of different food products. It's pervasive in our lives. It's found in human urine quite commonly. So, you know, things perhaps we wouldn't be worrying so much if there'd been better stewardship, if there'd been more restricted use, if it had been treated more like the toxic chemical that it is. Certainly there are a lot of toxic chemicals that are used in our lives. The problem is when you hide the risks, you trumpet the rewards, but you hide the risks, you whitewash the risks. This is, you know, this is the crime in my view, or the deception of the people who are exposed to this.
Yeah, right. You have Scott Partridge on record saying in a phone interview that it would be remarkable if Monsanto could manipulate the EPA under the Obama administration, saying, if I can kill this, I should get a gold medal. These are all types of, that was Roland saying that. I mean, there's all types of documents saying that, yet there really is not much of a hate punishment, right? There's no consequences to their actions.
There's no consequences. I mean, yes, you see, Jess Roland is the EPA official who led the Cancer Assessment Review Committee within the EPA. and determined that there was no issue with glyphosate. When he talked about if I kill this, I should get a medal, that was in reference to a different government agency, the ATSDR, which is part of Health and Human Services. And that agency said it was going to do a review of glyphosate. Monsanto said, gosh, no, we don't want that to happen. And they went to EPA. They went to their friends at EPA and said, can you make this go away, basically? And they did make it go away. We have the emails that show how it very quickly they jumped when Monsanto called and got busy. And eventually the ATSDR agreed to drop its review of glyphosate. So, you know, again, many different examples. That's just one of them. They've done this time and time and time again.
Have you seen any, in all your years of doing this, have you seen progress for the general public as far as them being not, I mean, I know awareness is the first step. You know, when people become more aware, they can, here's the thing I really want to emphasize. Once we know better, then we can begin to do better, and then we can begin to achieve better. So by you being on this call and doing the work you're doing right now, when you're headed to the pillow, and I know you have a headache every night. I get it. I know you do. But there has to be, Carrie, a sense of reward knowing that what you're doing is for the greater cause. And it has to be fulfilling. So are you seeing progress in our favor as the general public in all this?
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely. There are measures popping up all over the country where cities and townships and school districts and others are saying, you know, we're not going to have these pesticides sprayed on our school grounds anymore. You're seeing that all over the place in, you know, different states at state levels. You're seeing people talk about parks and playgrounds. People in their neighborhoods are telling their landscapers, you know, don't be spraying this on my ground anymore. Communities in Florida are starting to be aware of what it's doing to waterways where it's being sprayed on, weeds around lakes and things like that. So I've seen a great, you know, outpouring. And the message I'm hoping to convey is if we make glyphosate and Monsanto go away, you don't solve the problem. So let's just be aware of that. Let's not just, you know, Monsanto is the poster child for a much bigger problem, and that is unchecked, indiscriminate use of pesticides in our food production system and in our landscape. So we need to be aware of the risks as well as the rewards. We need to be educated. And yes, and if people who are concerned about this need to go and take action, and that's what you're seeing around the country with these people. But now it's worth noting that in Washington, you've had the chemical industry try to pass laws that would negate local laws, again, would nullify any local efforts to do this. So again, it's a battle. They are battling.
Can't large corporations who want to provide people healthier choices, a lot of packaging now says non-GMO. Great. Well, can't they add something that says no glyphosate, a symbol for that? Is it difficult to get that done?
Monsanto doesn't want what they've done. I mean, if you remember back in the 2000s, again, Monsanto was marketing a bovine growth hormone, basically that for dairy farmers to give their cattle, their dairy cows, to make them produce more milk. And that seemed like a great idea until it turned out that it was, you know, giving the dairy cows, you know, illnesses and
tumors,
inflamed, right. And it caused all sorts of problems, and people were worried about the hormone transferring to the milk, et cetera, et cetera. So people wanted to market their milk as, you know, free of this hormone, and Monsanto threw a fit. Heck no. So, litigated over that. So there's a lot of litigation and threats and things about how you label, obviously, and the FDA has to weigh in on that. But people are trying to move to glyphosate-free, certified glyphosate-free, pesticide-free. You know, this is why you're seeing more organic sales. You're seeing organic sales growth. People are worried about pesticides in their foods. And, I think we should be. If you look at FDA data, which I lay a lot of that out in the book as well, if you look at FDA data about pesticide residues in foods, it's really unappetizing, I guess is the way to say it. 85% of fruits and vegetables generally are carrying pesticide residue. Big bowl of strawberries you think would be so healthy is laden with insecticides. I mean, it's fungicides. It's not a good thing.
No. So you're up there in Kansas, correct? State of Kansas?
I'm based in Kansas.
Right.
Yeah.
So
farm country.
Right. I was going to say that's pretty much farm country right there. So are you seeing a transformation up there in your area as far as people growing more healthier, more organic crops as farmers?
I mean, you know, still, you know, it's, I mean, we got miles and miles and miles of, as far as you can see, of, you know, row crops and wheat and corn and things like that. And for many of those farmers, they're sticking to conventional, to pesticides. But you are seeing a growing number of farmers who are moving away from it. And there's a group of farmers in the Midwest called themselves the IDEA Network, IDEA, IDEA Network. And they are exploring all sorts of different strategies to try to grow food without, you know, such heavy use of pesticide and pesticide-free if they can. And they've got a little money from USDA and they're partnering with universities. And, you know, so people are doing that. And just today, the founder of Blue Apron, one of the co-founders of Blue Apron, you know, the home meal delivery, announced that he's launching something called Cook's Venture, which is this large organic farming operation, essentially, with the operations in Oklahoma and all around. And he really wants to make this sort of a big player because organic is more than just about a label or a marketing technique or reduced pesticides. It's also about more sustainability. It's about carbon capture. It's about, you know, animal welfare. It's just about a better balance that to help us have a healthier future. And I think that's what we all want for our children. So people are learning, people are growing, and people are doing things. And I think that's really admirable and important.
It is. And I'm not sure if I heard you say this. I heard it, it might have been you, that back when Monsanto first started bringing this Roundup out and wanted to bring it to the public, they had to obviously had to be tested, and the mice were tested, and the mice were dying. Several mice were dying over and over again. Monsanto turns in their report and saying, here's our report, the mice are dying. And then the EPA says, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure we can, was it EPA or FDA? Was it the EPA that said, hold on a second, slow down with your product here and retest? And Monsanto says, no, the hell with it. We're not retesting it. We're going, this is what we're going to do. And we're going to relaunch it anyway. Is that kind of the gist of it?
That's the gist of it. Yeah. I lay that out in my book. That's the 1983 mouse study, or Knievich and Hogan, but right. Yeah. I mean, this was a very big, long 2-year study on 400 mice, and they handed it over to the EPA, and the EPA toxicologist looked at it and said, wow, this looks like it causes cancer because all these mice are getting tumors, except for the mice that weren't dosed with glyphosate. And Monsanto basically said, no, you're looking at it wrong. Let us tell you how to look at it. And they got into a little bit of a battle, and the EPA scientist said, it's not our job to protect you. It's our job to protect the public. I mean, there was an effort back in the 80s from the EPA scientists to try to battle back against Monsanto, but Monsanto prevailed. They were able to maneuver in a whole lot of different ways there that I lay out in the book, and they were able to actually convince EPA supervisors to overturn their own scientists.
It goes back to what I said earlier. You know, you have a company who created Agent Orange. Then they come out with Roundup, then they test it on the mice. The mice are dying. Then they're associated with a major food labels. In my opinion, that's not somebody who I want making, have anything to do with my food. Okay. Let's say that. So how can people find you? Let's talk about that. How can they follow you and support you and learn more about what you're doing? And because you're doing a lot of great things.
Well, thank you. That's nice. Twitter, like for social media, I guess I'm on Twitter quite a bit. I share documents that I find, you know, scientific studies and just news and things like that. People who are interested in this topic. And then I do research right now for US Right to Know, nonprofit group, little teeny tiny nonprofit. We could use donations, but that's where I file Freedom of Information Act requests with different agencies. I've had to sue the EPA twice now to get documents. I've won both of those lawsuits. Thank goodness. But yeah, that's US Right to Know, usrtk.org. We post documents on our website. We share them with journalists and whomever, you know, wants to see them, have free access. So we're just trying to be informative to the public about our food system and trying to just do work to protect us all. I've got three kids, you know, I want them to grow up healthy and have a healthy future.
I have a responsible mother, Carrie. And before we let you go, I have to ask you this. Now that you, with all your knowledge and information, everything you know behind the scenes, the documents, the cover-ups, the book, when you go shopping, you obviously have a different view of the food you're providing your family. So the people listening right now who had no clue, who only had maybe had heard about this and through hearsay, now they've heard it from you, somebody who has the research and the reputation, what simple steps can they take today, not tomorrow, today, right now, and the next time they go grocery shopping to start providing their families healthier foods as you're doing?
Oh my. Well, processed foods are the devil's work, right? I mean,
Amen.
I think we all know that. I, for me, having read the FDA reports, which I do every year when they come out, and you see how high and how prevalent pesticide residues are in fruits and vegetables in particular. So I try to be very careful when I buy the fruits and vegetables to buy organic. And, you know, and that's very important to me. And I try to do the same with milk and eggs. You know, but and meat, but not everybody can do that. So I think, you know, if you just want to make a choice, buy organic strawberries for sure. You know, your berries, your vegetables, as I'm saying, these things that we feed our kids, and oatmeal in particular, gosh, oatmeal is terrible because of the desiccation. You know, educate yourselves and then make food choices, you know, that are as best as you can, I guess. I don't ever like telling people what to do. That's not my job.
No, but sharing information how to take better care of yourself. That's what you're doing right now. So is there anywhere on your site they can find suggestions?
We don't tell people what to do. We don't make suggestions. We just provide the data and the documents. So at US Right to Know, there's a whole array of different things. And boy, if you see what's going on with the beverage industry and the CDC, that's a whole nother thing to see how closely connected Coca-Cola and our Center for Disease Control is on obesity and diabetes issues. And so things like that, you can find at our website, just information
Perfect.
To help you make
That's
make
great.
Good choices.
Educated decisions. Thank you again, Carrie. We appreciate your time and love to have you back with some further updates. I'd love to get more information about that, that we just touched upon, the sugar, because sugar is one of the biggest immune suppressors in society, in the world. And we put it in our bodies on a regular basis. That needs to have some light shine out as well. So thank you again. Let's get you back on the show in the future. Get back to do what you do best. Go kick Monsanto in the ass. We all appreciate that.
Thanks for having me on. Thank you so much.
Have a great day. We love you. Thank you.
All right. You too. Bye.
If healthy and sustainable living is important to you and your family, join the Coleman family as they travel the country and discover some of the best agri communities in America.